Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. I'm excited to be joined tonight by Jen from the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome back, Jen.
Thanks, Michael. Nice to be here.
Yes. I understand you're just back from Africa.
Just back from Africa.
Just back. And your sleeping is normal.
Well, I was just ruminating on that about how jet lag is so funny. You know, all day, I woke up very, very early this morning, chipper, ready to go, no problem. Went all day long, and about 30 minutes ago, felt like I was just going to fall over. So it's kind of like that. You know, you feel fine until you don't, and then it feels like it's the middle of the night suddenly.
Yes, yes, all of a sudden. Jen, I know you give away almost every secret on the blog.
I know.
I'm a dedicated reader of the blogs. And yet, it's really fun to have you live because although you type and type and type, I know, it's great to hear, you know, firsthand what really made an impression on you.
Yeah, I think so. You know, it reminds me, too, of there have been times when we've gathered folks together and we show them video clips of the program and the projects, and people say, boy, you know, I see so many pictures, you say so many things about it, but to see the video is a whole other kind of dimension of it. And it's kind of the same thing with talking about it versus reading about it. It gives you another perspective on it.
Yes. Yes. So tell me what really struck you. I can tell you what struck me from the blogs.
Okay.
And I'd love to hear from you also.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there were really three main objectives for the trip. And they were updating our media, meaning, you know, we've got pictures on the web of the kids and that are in the program, but a lot of those pictures are now 2 or 3 years old. We had foolishly on the trip that Dave went on a trip, what was it, in September, I guess it was, and that was sort of one of the things on the list. If you get to it, you know, take current pictures of the kids, and he came home and said, boy, I wasn't successful with that. That was a big job. And so we knew that we really wanted to do that this trip, and sure enough, it was a huge job, but probably one of the most fun things we've ever done, I would say. And the reason for that was that it was so, I can't tell you how moving it was to have the children come. You know, we had them all lined up behind us. The teachers were keeping the chaos at bay while Sherry and I were photographing the kids one by one. And to have especially the kids who were in like second and third grade come and one by one sit in front of us and for us to recognize them from the kids who were teeny tiny in that 100 children video.
Yeah.
It was so moving and it was so much fun to see them. It was like, you know, seeing in a way your own kids suddenly grown up before your very eyes.
Yes. Yes. So 350 of them.
350 of them.
Uh-huh.
We have yet, there's still a ton of work to do on it. You know, for each child, we took a photo of them holding a piece of paper with their name, age, and grade. And then we took one or two more photos of them without that, just with a big smile on their face. And so now we have the work to do to go through and pair the names with the ages and the grades so that we can get it all up on the web. But it's really fun. It's a fun project.
It is very fun. So tell me, you mentioned there were three objectives. The first one was updating the media.
Yep. The second one was really putting some time and focus on the microfinance projects. One of the things we've always known about the project is that if it's going to be sustainable, there has to be some way of solid income in the community for people to be making their own money to be able to eventually take over the expense of the projects.
Yes.
And so, again, that was just, we met that objective beyond our wildest dreams, at least for me. So we talked, I guess it was the kind of second or third to last day with the team, laying out all the things that all the ideas they have and how we can meet those objectives. I think the thing that was so fun about it was that we knew going into this trip that was going to be a major focus. And the first thing Teresa said to us when we got there was, oh, I can't wait to show you the tuck shop. So tuck shop is their word for just kind of a local, selling little goods, that kind of thing.
Yes.
And so blog readers have seen the picture of the tuck shop on the blog. But it was what's happening is they're creating the microfinance projects. You know, so there's the well, and they're collecting the little bit of money that each community member pays for coming to collect clean water. And then they're taking that money to to use to buy the simple boards and the nails to build the tuck shop. And then from the money that they got for the bags that they created for that conference that Sherry went to back in October,
yeah,
they used the proceeds from that to buy the initial, invest in the initial things that they're selling in the tuck shop, and then they're getting a profit from that. And it's just, it's so much fun to see these tiny little projects grow themselves.
Yes. Sounds like of their own initiative almost.
Of their own initiative, exactly. Yeah. We met with, we also mentioned this in the blog, but some folks, actually they're mostly, a couple of them were Zimbabwean and one Zambian, who run a microfinance kind of project. It's international, but they run the part of the Zambian part of it. And it was fun to meet with them and have them kind of lay out how they do it. And, you know, they're all trained in microfinance community projects and, you know, here's how you do it, blah, 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 blah. And then have them come see our project and have us talk about what we're doing and realize, little did we know, just from kind of following, you know, our intuition and what seemed like the next thing to do, it's exactly what they do. And it was just so fun to see that and to see that, you know, I was telling them that ever since we started the project, I've really had a strong, all of us really have had a strong feeling of, all right, so this is, you know, we're starting with emergency aid here. How are we going to move this to be sustainable? You know, how is that movement going to happen? And to realize, seeing that tuck shop, we realized we're not going to have to make it happen. They're making it happen. All we
yes.
have to do is to be the support system.
Yes, yes. I was just thinking, as you said, that what you're doing, you know, is exactly what you're, quote, supposed to do as microfinance. And I was thinking the power of conscious, compassionate awareness.
I'm right there. Exactly.
Paying attention. Yes.
Exactly. You know, because the thing, if it's the thing that is the best for all, that's often a way that we talk about it.
Yes.
Then when we're present, it will occur to us. You know?
Yes.
There's nothing we need to learn or, you know, I mean, it helps to read about things and to hear what other people are doing and spark
yes.
ideas from each other, but there's no rule to follow, you know. When we're present, the thing that's going to work occurs to us.
Yes, that's exactly my experience. Indeed. Jen, tell me about the third objective.
The third one was to get that community center built.
Yes.
It's funny. I guess like a lot of building projects, you know, we get whatever, you know, a ton of it done so that you look at it and feel like, boy, that building is, that must be just about complete, which it is when you look at it. And yet there's a lot, you know, okay, you got to finish up the plumbing and finish up the electrical and, you know, make sure that the roof isn't leaking and, you know, put up the ceiling board and paint. And so when you look at it, there are a lot of little details to finish up. And it's been a challenge from being this far away from the project to really oversee that and have that happen. And so one of the, again, sort of much like the microfinance, actually, we knew that we had to do something to help get that, you know, get the building finished, but we didn't know what it was going to be. And then we had that brainstorm of, oh, my goodness, you know, here's Friday, who's been so successful in getting those roofs on the houses in Cantalumba, the individual roofs. Why not put him in charge? And so that was a really big shift, and we had to do a lot of negotiation with the team there to make that happen. But we're very optimistic that that's going to be that's going to kind of turn us a corner and hopefully put us on track to finish the building, I would say, in the next 3 to 6 months.
3 to 6 months. Wow. Wow.
Yeah, which seems, you know, by American standards, working on a construction project, 3 to 6 months, wow, that's a long time. You can get a lot done. But, you know, I mean, when you consider workers get sick with malaria, you know, they have to go off to funerals. There are cement shortages. Suddenly there's a spike in fuel prices. I mean, the list of what, you know, what can happen, what can get in the way is really endless. So it's not that, I mean, we really understand that, but we need someone who's in place who, you know, when things can happen, he's there ready to make it happen. He's overseeing it. He's ready to have the materials on site. He's communicating with us. He's, you know, he's on top of it. And I'm, you know, Friday's an extraordinary person, as is Teresa. So we feel like we have a really strong team in there now.
Yes. And what strikes me both in the blog when you wrote about it and just now is different from many other situations where things aren't working. I don't hear any finger pointing. I don't hear any blame.
Yep.
There's no something wrong.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's just so much more pleasant and helpful.
It really is.
And so much easier to change directions.
Yes. Yes. It's so true. It's so true. That, you know, what we said over and over is, you know, we want everyone to come out winning in this situation, you know. So what's the thing that's going to work? Well, this could work. Let's try this. Yeah. It's so true. Not to be attached to how it's going to happen, so that when an insight comes through about how it could happen, everyone can get on board with that.
Yes, absolutely. Jen, as always, it's a great pleasure and privilege to have you join us here.
Many thanks, Michael.
Okay.
Okay, have a good show.
Okay, thank you. Good
Bye-bye.
Night. Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm in much the same position that Jen just described. I did exactly the same thing. In fact, I woke up this morning very early, and it's like, all right, I'm excited. There's so much stuff that we're working on and that we want to focus on, and I'm ready. And then all of a sudden, it's just like, it's kind of like a cartoon, you know, just boom. And if I were 3 years old, I would just lie down on the floor and go to sleep.
Yeah.
So, and then it passes, and you know, we forget that we're 10 hours. You know, I mean, we're almost with at this time of year. It's almost exactly, you know, when people are having their daytime here, we're having our nighttime there, and then just in that 24-hour flight to turn that upside down. And so it's good. It was wonderful to be there. Just wonderful. I wish everybody could go. It's grand to be home.
Great.
Yeah.
Yes, and I remember we've talked about this before. Great to go and great to come home.
Yeah, yeah. And that place that, I don't know if it's just a regular place for everybody or, you know, how it works, but that feeling of I'm there and I want to stay there. You know, I want to stay there because this doesn't feel very real, that other world that those other people are living in. You know, those people who sleep all the time that we're up doing stuff and who are working when we're sleeping. And then to get here and just how very quickly that the reality of that place begins to fade away. And how this world, this reality is now what's real. So if that's how we're all constructed, it's a great design.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. It sounds a lot like practice. Being
yeah.
here when I'm here and there when I'm there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that blessedly it's always here.
Yes. Yes. Yes, you don't have to go there to get here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great.
So, and it's a very exciting time in our country and around the world. It was fun to be in Africa as we were getting ready to install Barack Obama as our new president here. Imagine, I don't know, maybe can't imagine, but people are very, very excited.
Yeah,
very excited. They know all about it. It's funny, they kind of, you know, almost know more about our politics than most Americans know. But I'm fond of saying it's a good time to be alive.
Yes. You know, I was surprised how moved I was by watching his speech this morning.
Uh-huh.
I didn't realize that the cynic has been around for quite a while.
Oh. Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yeah. And to feel the heart open and...
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's a nice
feeling.
Yeah, indeed. Very inclusive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And that old hope and optimism and, you know, that feeling of the best in us and recognizing that in one another and wanting to put our energy into that. I love the fact that that he calls on us to make some sacrifices and to roll up our sleeves and go beyond ourselves and do something generous, do something for the world. You know, it's very much the kind of thing we talk about all the time in practice. And
yes.
So it's very inspiring to see that message being given just generally. Not only to our country, but to the entire world. But say, you know, we can do this, and what we need to do is, in our language, turn our attention away from egocentric karmic conditioning, turn it back to center, realize our interconnectedness, start to participate, feel our hearts open, feel inspired, let that generosity of spirit arise, and then, you know, go out and see what it is that each one of us can contribute.
Yes, yes.
Good. It's not something we are used to getting in the world of politics.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's my experience. Indeed.
Yeah.
Sherry, we have several callers lined up here.
I was just going to say, did anybody want to talk to us tonight?
Yeah.
Good.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, friends. This is Max calling from Cambridge.
Hello.
Hi. This is a great day. I had a very heart-opening experience watching President Obama, too, and I'm really thrilled today.
Yeah. I talked to so many people who said they were going to fly a flag today. They felt like they sort of had their patriotism back, and
some patriotism restored. That's an unusual feeling. Yeah,
People walking around grinning at each other and things like that. It's just a crazy, remarkable thing.
Yes. Well, I called.
So, what else is going on in your life?
Well, conditioning doesn't want me to call in, and I made a vow that I would do that this month. I've never called into the show before, and in fact, I'm pretty phobic about being on the phone altogether.
Uh-huh.
So the thing I'm calling in about is to just, stare that down and do it anyway.
Yes. The fact that all of that is going on means that you are actually required to call into the show.
Yes, there was a very clear, obvious message. Oh, this is what's required of me.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and not in a having nothing to do with you're a good person if you do and you're a bad person if you don't, but just having to do with there's all of this resistance, all of this information that says, no, you can't, no, you shouldn't, and so therefore, yeah, I have to face that down.
Yes. I have something similar going on at work. I've been in the same job for 5 years, really earning much less than my peers and having sort of a miserable time feeling underappreciated or really not appreciated at all, and yet staying in the same job because conditioning tells me I'm not I'm really not qualified enough to go anywhere else or do anything else. And I think the other reason I called in today was to just sort of say to the Sangha that actually this is, it's change for the country and change the world and change for me this year. I really want a new job.
For all those same reasons.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because otherwise what you're agreeing to is, yes, conditioning, your assessment of me is accurate.
Mm-hmm.
You're right, so I just need to go along.
Go along, and I deserve this sort of punishing experience and show up for that every day, yeah.
Uh-huh. and so what you're required to do
is say, no, actually, I don't believe that. That's not true. And then we're going to set about proving that's not true and that something else is available and possible for me, and I'm going to pursue that. Thank you very much.
Yes, and it's the pursuing that I think really needs to happen. I was listening in particular today the part in the speech about, you know, picking yourself up and dusting yourself off and actually then getting down to the hard labor and feeling like that's just sort of another piece of it, that I've been afraid of the hard labor of actually working to find better work.
Mm-hmm. Well, I came home. I had this conversation with someone on this trip, and I came home inspired to attempt to communicate something. And I'm actually going to tomorrow morning. I'm going to write the monthly email that I write, and it's going to be on this subject. And I got home, and I was very, you know, I get very enthusiastic about things, as people have perhaps noticed. And I was very enthusiastic about explaining this thing that I'm going to say to you in a minute to someone who said, now, I don't see how that's different from what you always say, which was a little bit disappointing to me because I couldn't figure out whether, in fact, it wasn't as new and exciting and inspiring as I thought, or I just wasn't able to communicate it in a way that showed how extraordinary it is. So this is going to be my work because I feel like I have an opportunity to articulate succinctly something that I, in fact, have been talking about for the last 30 years or whatever it is. So I'm going to lay it on you, okay, and see how this goes, because it feels like it points directly at what you're saying. So what I want to do, and it's probably going to be a book, and it's probably going to be something that maybe Alex and June both work on, because it's going to require a lot of little pictures of these people. And the people, there are four people involved in this. There might be five people, but for sure there are four figures, we could say, or entities, more than not necessarily people. Almost four perspectives. And the one perspective is the illusion of a separate self, which people, you know, a concept that people who are around practice are very familiar with. Very, extremely, extraordinarily difficult to get a sense of exactly what that means for oneself. But the illusion of a separate self. And then, of course, there's egocentric karmic conditioning and its cohort, self-hatred. Okay, so that's another little unit over there. And then there's, of course, as we know, center, conscious compassion and awareness, or unconditional love and acceptance. So that's another perspective. And then there is what I've been calling the incarnation, the being, or the human. And it's not necessary that it's a human, but it's the animated form. Okay, so are we good so far?
Yes.
All right. So Max came in as an incarnation, right? Just life is animating this form, and those of us who have children, know children, like children, or around children, know that experience of being with a physical form that is animated and doesn't experience itself as separate from life.
Yes.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
So we know what that authentic life experience in form looks like, feels like. And so by the time we are socialized, of course, we've lost that authenticity. That's
That's what we leave in order to be socialized and fit into society. And we truly believe ourselves to be that illusion of a separate self. Of course, we don't think of ourselves as an illusion of a separate self. We think of that as me or I. And the relationship that that illusion lives in is with egocentric karmic conditioning. And so for almost everybody walking around on the planet, they believe that's who they are. And in fact, when they look, when they hear a term like authenticity or the authentic self or your true nature, they really believe that they have an experience of that. Hmm. And of course, they don't, because what they're experiencing is the relationship between the illusion of a separate self and egocentric karmic conditioning. And that's why somebody with a job like mine has such a hard time, because it's attempting to get somebody to understand that there is an experience that they think they're having that they're not having. Okay? That there's an authentic being that is no longer a part of their regular experience. And so that me that they experience, that they think is who they really are, is not who they are. Okay? So that's kind of the heart and soul of spiritual practice, right? Or even whether we talk about spiritual or religious or whatever it is. It's having an experience of authenticity that is an awakening experience, because the person wakes up to the fact that who they are truly is not who they thought they were at all. Okay? So are we good so far?
Well, but we don't really come to practice without having that experience a little bit, right?
There is something we can come to practice for a variety of reasons. We can know that there's something more. We can suspect it. Yes, we have that experience all the time, but people don't recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So usually people are hoping that there's a place that they can get to.
Yes.
Okay? Yeah. So I'm sure that, for instance, that what the Buddha taught is true. It's possible to wake up and that's what I want to do. It's possible to end suffering. Okay, that's what I want to do. And then that job is turned over to the relationship between the illusion of a separate self and egocentric karmic conditioning.
Yes.
Yeah? And so, to bring it back to Max, that's what makes looking for a new job something difficult.
Oh, yes, because ego is there and self-hatred is there constantly telling me, oh, you can't put that on your resume. That's very, that's very presumptuous and blah, blah, blah,
Precisely.
In every moment.
Precisely. Yeah. And so what we hear but cannot believe is that relationship between the illusion of a separate self and egocentric karmic conditioning, is not only is it a delusion, it is irrelevant.
Yeah.
Because what's possible for us and what is the point of spiritual practice is the relationship between center and the incarnation. And almost nobody ever gets to that because they remain stuck believing the conversation between the illusion of a separate self and egocentric karmic conditioning. Exactly the one that you just described. Okay, so I want to wake up and end suffering. All right, how am I going to do that? Well, what you need to do is blah, 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 blah. Well, I don't see how I could do that. I mean, that's just too hard. Okay, I can do it. All right, I'm going to get on a program. You're not doing it. and it's not working, and the reason that it's not working is because of this. Okay? So when we consider it, we realize how much of our time we're spending over there in that relationship. When what we should be doing, what we're meant to be doing, what's possible for us to do, is to drop that conversation altogether and work at realizing who we actually are, which is conscious, compassionate awareness. And that's that place where you say, well, when we come to spiritual practice, don't we come having had that experience? And that's the experience that we've had. We have those moments of unconditional love and acceptance where people call it grace. You know, the heart opens. Suddenly there's a peak experience. There's a moment of clarity. There's where we recognize there's something available to us that is far greater than the place that we ordinarily live. And that gets pulled into that conversation, okay, where that you know that that experience is possible. Why don't you do that more often? What is the matter with you that you can't, if you would just change this, if you would just be different in that way, then you could have that awareness, but no, you don't, and so you can't, okay? So with practice, what we're learning to do is drop everything so that we can have more and more time with an open heart in that expansive place where we are feeling grateful and recognize, have a sense of the interconnectedness of life and all of that. And as we recognize that as who we are, what is possible for us is to embrace into that compassion the incarnation. Okay? So that's when finding a new job for Max becomes a joyous experience. Because from center, what we can see is, wow, look at that. Look at that human being. Don't you just kind of want to make her life work? Don't you just kind of want to help her understand and realize how extraordinary she is, what a gift she is, what a beautiful example of authentic nature in form. So when I was talking about it with somebody earlier, saying that this is the return to the Garden of Eden. This is placing that incarnation in an environment that is loving and supportive and beautiful and clear, exciting, and making all of that available to that human being all the time. And how does that happen? Through unconditional love and acceptance. No improvement, no self-improvement, no need to change anything about that incarnation. Because from center, we realize, we experience and can see and feel and know the perfection of that incarnation. It's only from the illusion of a separate self and egocentric karmic conditioning that it's possible to believe and stay in that place of projecting something wrong onto that incarnation that needs to be fixed.
Well, this is a little different than the things you've been saying before.
Well, good.
Yeah.
I mean, it is the same thing, but it feels simpler or clearer to me to be able to see those as four distinct perspectives,
mm-hmm.
and to be able to really, so, you know, when we continue to lay it out, we'll be able to differentiate the conversations. So what does it look like when you are identified with unconditional love and acceptance in relationship with an incarnation? What is the conversation? What does it look like? What are the beliefs and assumptions when the conversation is between egocentric karmic conditioning and the illusion of a separate self? Of course, that one, the illusion of a separate self and egocentric karmic conditioning have their conversation in the dark room that we talk about. Okay? Mm-hmm. The incarnation is in relationship with unconditional love and acceptance in the room with the lights on.
You know, Sherry, it sort of feels like there's a lot of stuff that happens in the dark room. Like, that's where a lot of tasks get done. And, like, if you had a list of tasks that you needed to get a new job, it seems like that's where sort of the work happens. That's not where good jobs come from.
Yeah.
They're not there.
That's the belief. Yeah? Is that what you're saying? That's the belief when you're in that conversation with an illusion of a separate self and egocentric karmic conditioning.
Well, the belief is that you have to tackle this whole list of things and you have to polish your resume and you have to, like, learn these new skills and you have to put yourself out there and all this stuff that you have to do, and it feels overwhelming. And that dark room, there's no good jobs in there, like, only bad jobs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
And so when you're, you know, again, when we, if we think of this with a child, so imagine that you're going to do a resume for a three-year-old.
Okay.
Yeah. And so what would you put down? I mean, there would be no question of ego, because this person is spontaneous and bright and engaged and participatory and kind and expansive and generous and, you know, all of these things, which would all be true.
Uh-huh.
As well as utterly charming. And so... So what's possible for a person who lives with those qualities and only has those qualities supported? And, of course, that's where the good jobs are.
Right.
So that's a great project for 2009, that
uh-huh.
new job, because the new job really is recognizing who you actually are and practicing living from that place.
Well, I can totally hire me for that.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I'm going to call you next month.
Good.
Tell you how that job's going.
Excellent. I would appreciate that very much.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Max. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, that was very powerful for me, what you shared.
Yeah. That it's. I'm excited about it. You know, it's so funny because I've been doing this for so long. Now, I, of course, you know, what's so long? But for, you know, for a lifetime, doing something like this, 30 or 35 years, that qualifies as a long time. And to regularly get to a place where something appears in a way that makes the whole thing just brand new and shiny and sparkly, and that has been the case for me through all of these years. It's just, to me, it's what makes practice so extraordinary. It's the one thing in life, it seems to me, that makes everything else about life so wonderful and so worthwhile.
Yes, that's my experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great. So, yeah, just when I think, you know, people say, well, what are you working on now? Well, nothing, you know, I've just sort of said everything I want to say and kind of, you know, and now, you know, like currently there are like 6 projects that I just cannot wait to do. Good.
Wonderful. Sherry, we're going to take a quick sponsor break, and we have many callers after that.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
The Zen Blues Quartet is a collaborative music project celebrating life and the music of the blues. Good musicians and good friends coming together to make something really beautiful simply because we can. Zen Blues Music. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice, because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, what a life.
Visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have 3 more callers in the queue here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Todd.
Hey, Todd.
Hey, Sherry.
Hi,
Michael.
Doing?
I'm good. Hi. Welcome home.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed following the blogs along your trip.
All right. Yeah.
It was fun to just see all the things going on there and to meet the kids and see all the women and the men involved in the compound there and the Compassion Works.
Yeah.
Really
yeah.
exciting stuff.
It really is.
Yeah.
In fact, another ambition that I have coming up in the next little while is to start making this project more, let's see, let me start that sentence over again. What's happening there is something that I think can happen and needs to happen in a lot of places around the world.
Uh-huh.
And I think that the thing that is being proved there is that what makes the difference is relationship.
Right.
And so in the same way that what makes a difference in practice is Sangha,
yes.
what makes a difference for transforming lives in the physical realm
mm-hmm.
Is the same thing. And, of course, we don't talk about ourselves as Sangha, but that's what's going on.
Right.
And so people coming together, making a commitment to one another, staying together, working together,
mm-hmm.
can just result in or produce tremendous changes in lives. And so I really want us to start talking to other people about following this same kind of process.
Yeah.
So instead of just going into a place and doing this one thing, you know, in 4,500 villages, which is, it's great, you know,
sure.
it's great. I mean, the people who are, you know, digging wells all over Africa, it's, I mean, that is an extraordinary thing.
Yeah.
And along with that, if there were a group of people who would say to that community who got that well, and we're going to work with you to help you get schools and help you get started with microfinance so that you can, you know, in the same way that Cantalomba is being able to move forward, I think people, once they think about it in that way, there will be a lot of people interested in participating in
yeah.
that way. Because, as we recognize here, what people love about that work in Cantalomba is that getting to know those people.
Yeah.
As Jen was saying, you know, 3 years later, we're seeing these kids grow up.
Mm-hmm.
We know who these people are. We know their names, and we know their children, and we know their dreams and ambitions and what they're capable of and inspired by. And
yeah.
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 It's a good deal.
And for me, what I really enjoyed in the blogs was when you took us along on the new roof tour.
Uh-huh.
And had them stand out in front of their homes and show us inside of their homes. And what really struck me is that how with so little, they do so much.
Yes.
And it makes me really look around to see that I am just, have so much more than them, and how much can I do? You know, it makes me really want to reexamine of where I am, right?
Yeah.
And it gets me excited, and I feel really a part of that. I contribute, I participate in financial support of it. I participate in whatever I can. I sponsor a child. So I really feel that connection, and that's that thing of the other side is a separate self, right? But I do feel part of that community. I feel part of Cantalomba.
Yes.
And I'm in Canada.
Yeah.
You know, I'm 10,000 miles away.
Yeah, exactly.
But I've followed it since 05, and I've followed the progression and the works and the trips, and I feel as maybe as part of that community, not being actually physically there, but as connected as I can feel from so far away.
Yes, yeah.
And I so enjoyed when the Living Compassion ladies came into the, it looked like a gazebo, and you're taking pictures of each one, and we could connect the faces with the names. And I, too, also got to know them.
Yes.
And that was really exciting.
Yeah. Now, the next time, I have to talk to folks about this, but it would be really fun. We're trying to figure out a way, actually, to introduce all of you people to them.
Fun.
Because it's just kind of a theory to them. I mean, they know that there are people around the world who are making this happen.
Supporting them.
But they don't have any faces to connect it to.
Uh-huh.
And so because we don't have internet access there, you know, we were talking about making, you know, DVDs about, you know, or taking the website and turning that, you know, just ways that we can make people hear real to them so that they get to feel that same personal kind of connection and relationship.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And another part of it in the blog that really struck me was you're kind of towards the end having a final meeting with the men and the women, and you finally said, okay, what's next? And this hush of silence fell down. And I just felt like I was in the room, and it was like they were looking for you to tell them what to do next. And I loved the guidance was, no, this is your community. This is your lives. What do you want? And for me, it was like, yeah, that's right. What do I want?
Uh-huh.
I really got it. Like, what do I want from me? What is it in my practice? And what is it that I want to give to the world and get receive from the world? And I just felt such a connection to that experience. Of you giving it over to the community members to decide. And it was so neat when they said, well, let's get a mill and grind some corn, and let's get some land and grow some corn, and the men said, let's get a hydroform and build some buildings. It was just, it was so cool.
Yeah.
To see them to sort of take the reins in a sense.
Yes, and what we were talking about earlier with Max, you know, when we stay in that conversation between egocentric karmic conditioning and the illusion of a separate self, you know, those perspectives are never going to say, God, what do you want?
Yeah,
you know,
never.
What would light you up? What,
never.
At the end of your life, when you look back, what's going to make you feel like, yes, I was really here, I was really alive?
Yeah.
That's never going to happen. But when you get to center, and we're looking at the incarnation, that is the question.
Yeah.
What do you want your life to be?
Yeah.
And the realization that it can be anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not limited by what karma says you are and you have to do and be.
Right.
But the way we talk to our children.
Yeah.
You know, if the whole world is out there, it can be, you can make your life be any way you want it to be.
Yeah. And so
to be able to watch those people who have, you know, we think of ourselves as having a lot of options, although when we look carefully at our relationship with conditioning, we realize not that many.
Right.
But these folks truly would would believe themselves out of their experience to have almost no options. And then as soon as they're asked, well, but what would you like for your life?
Yeah.
Not only do they know the answer to that, but they have some very real good ideas about how to make it happen.
Yes. I've seen that through the progress of the community.
Mm-hmm.
I've witnessed their progression through just seeing what they want, and they go after it, and they get it, and things materialize.
Yeah.
Tuck shops and cooperatives and sewing and the community center and the medical center. That just in the wells and the fresh water and the new house. And some didn't do their roofs; they just expanded their homes, and you know, they creatively took the little microloans and did what they needed for themselves. And that was interesting to see.
And they take really good care of it. Then
I noticed.
Yeah.
We have. It was interesting when you said that. What came up for me is, we through egocentric karmic conditioning, we don't have a lot of options, but we have a lot of materialism, a lot of things around us that limit our options. Because I think that most of them are distractions for me, anyway.
Yes.
And maybe that's similar for other people.
Yeah. Well, because in that conversation with the illusion of a separate self and egocentric karmic conditioning, people are convinced that if you get that, then you'll have a particular feeling. Then you'll be happy. Then your life, and of course, you know what we experience over and over is that it doesn't work that way.
Nope.
But we aren't in that conversation. We aren't given any alternatives.
That's right.
Because again, in that conversation, we're never going to hear, well, you know, just sit down quietly and see what your heart guides you to. No, go out and buy a bigger flat screen
TV. Yeah.
That's what's going to do it for you.
And it doesn't. Because that till now, I've only started to see that recently. But no, none of the materialist stuff that I've acquired has done anything but, for me, continued suffering. Kept it in place.
Because it keeps us in that conversation.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't mean we can't just have whatever size television set we want. If it's coming from a different place.
That's right.
But when it's in that conversation that this is the thing that's going to light up your life and open your heart and make you feel the way you know intuitively you can feel, it's not going to work.
I sense, too, from conscious compassionate awareness, one wouldn't be grasping at a 60-inch plasma screen, high definition.
Probably not, huh?
No, I sense that. I don't know. You can still do it. But anyway, I want other people to get a chance to talk tonight, so I'm going to say goodnight.
Thank you.
Really great talking to you, and thank you, Michael, for hosting the show and always being there so I can participate and show up. And we'll talk soon. We'll talk soon.
All right. Thank you so much,
Sherry. Good night.
Good night. Thanks for joining us, Todd. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I've had this experience before where we talk about Africa, and it's amazing. You know, quote, my concerns, they just kind of shrink. they just kind of, you know, I just can't find the willingness to get excited about them anymore.
Yeah. It's true. And if we can hear that and know it without self-hatred coming in to make something wrong with it, if we can just realize that, wow, you know, I have privileged people problems.
Yes.
You know, I mean, if I didn't have any food or any way to get it, an awful lot of the things that occupy my attention during the day would just slide way, way to the back burner. And so just to keep that in mind. So if all of these other things that I take for granted weren't available to me, then I wouldn't be turning my attention to the places that my attention currently goes. Well, then why am I giving my attention to that anyway?
Yes.
Do you know? So how about if that attention doesn't actually need to be on that, if it could be on something else, well, what would I like my attention to be on? And, of course, eventually it occurs to us, you know, I'd like to have my attention on being happy, on enjoying life, on being grateful, on you know, loving folks and taking care of things. And
yes.
Yeah.
I love that description of privileged people problems. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, and to be able to take stock of our lives in that way and not let the self-hate conversation start.
Yeah.
But in fact, just to say, you know, it's true. I have everything in the world. I have everything in the world. I'm going to enjoy it. And then I'm going to be open to whatever is next after that.
Yes. Great idea.
Yeah. Apparently there's a thing in Judaism and I can't remember what the first part of it is, but the idea behind it is it's a really bad idea not what God gives you.
Not to enjoy what God gives you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to be grateful for it. You know, that it's kind of a slap in the face, God, to be given so much and not even essentially say thank you.
Yes.
And we know that in our personal relationship. And so why would it not apply to life? You know, if someone gave you all kinds of wonderful things that you need that make your life really better, and you never bothered to say thank you, we think, oh, gosh, what is going on with that? And yet we can receive from life all of these wonderful things and feel fine about continuing to turn our attention to what's wrong and what we need more of and how, you know, how we've been treated unfairly or we have these problems or whatever it is. So again, to just bring conscious awareness to that process and decide to turn that around without letting self-hate come in and take over, without needing to hear that I'm a bad person because I've been approaching life that way, but instead to just say, oh, well, that's really true. I think I don't want to do that anymore.
Yes, indeed. That does seem the key without the self-hatred.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sherry, we're going to take a quick sponsor break here, and then we have two more callers.
Right.
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Good evening, this is Beth.
Hey, Beth.
Hi, Sherry.
What's going on in your world?
I'm burning at the moment because I was dreading being the next caller.
You were
just
dreading it?
Oh, deeply. Deeply.
Can you say more about that?
Well, it's funny how these calls work, because whatever I'm looking at is whatever you end up talking about.
Uh-huh.
And in April, when we were on retreat, one of the things that you said to me in guidance is that I'm blessed.
Uh-huh.
And it feels like, you know, my life is falling apart.
And it's hard to see that as a blessing.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
You can't hold on to anything.
Uh-huh.
But I try.
Yeah, and it's hard to see that as good news.
Yes, it is very
uh-huh.
hard to see that as good news. So when you're talking
uh-huh.
about, you know, the privileged person's problems and so forth, it just seems like you know, I'm calling surrendering.
Say that again?
In calling, I'm surrendering.
Aha. Uh-huh. Yes. As we were talking about earlier, you're moving out of that conversation with egocentric karmic conditioning and self-hatred.
And for me personally, out of isolation.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to isolate as a point of security and safety,
mm-hmm.
which is very dangerous in reality.
Uh-huh.
It feels like, you know, like I just need to go someplace quiet, which is true. But I'm not going somewhere quiet to be quiet. I'm just going somewhere quiet to be devoured by conditioning.
Yes. Isn't that an important awareness to have?
I'm at the point where I'm seeing that I'm doing it.
Uh-huh.
But I'm still doing it.
Sure. Of course. Because you've been convinced for so long that that's a good thing to be doing. Whatever. It's amazing.
Well, it used to work. In my childhood, it helped me survive.
It was the best you had.
Okay.
Yeah. So, once we see through something like that, there's that transition point where, okay, I've seen it, but I have such a habit of it that it's kind of like, you know, it's a car rolling to a stop. Yeah? Rather than slamming on the brakes. You know, slam on the brakes and throw it into reverse. You know, we don't tend to do that in life. We roll to a stop. Then we can go in another direction.
I think there's a lot of control issues.
Yeah.
Like, as long as I stay in this space, I know who I am.
Well, now, again, the way we were talking about it earlier, this is a classic conversation between the illusion of a separate self and egocentric karmic conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
And you believing that's who you are.
Yes.
Yeah? So,
yes.
Yeah, so those folks are over there saying, now, as long as I keep doing it this way, then I know who I am. But what's completely left out of that is who Beth authentically is and the incarnation.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm back at the beginning again.
Say more about that.
It's been 10 years that I've been practicing with the monastery, but it's like I'm back at the beginning.
Uh-huh.
I'm still facing the same issues, and it's, I kind of get a handle on it, and then I completely lose it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, if we could get an amen, sister, from everybody listening to this show, everybody in the Sangha, you know, it would be a loud chorus. Because that's exactly how it goes. You move into the light, you see it, it's all very clear, and then there's just that slow slide back into the dark.
Yes.
And the way that slide is accomplished, you know, is very predictable. So one
it's
of
very
the words,
predictable.
Yeah, the one of the words that you used that's a big part of it is isolated.
That's
so
why
people
in particular.
People get talked into, not this, not that. So not being connected with practice, not sitting, not listening to the radio show. Not right now. Yeah. And slowly, over time, the lights go out, and the person is right back in that dark room with the illusion of a separate self and egocentric karmic conditioning as the only reality.
Yes. And I am back at the beginning. But I also have practice.
Mm-hmm. And, we never... It's not actually true. Now, I suppose if a person really devoted themselves to ignorance and delusion, really went at it full tilt as hard as they could maybe get back to a place of unconsciousness that's like where they were before the first glimmerings of light. But that would be very challenging. It seems like it's the same place. But it's not.
Well, I think it feels worse.
Well, that's proof that you've made progress.
It's almost like there's a part of me that's choosing conditioning, but there's part that it's intolerable to.
Well, yes. Now, again, you want to be very careful, because I would project that that is that same conversation, the intolerable and the clinging. It all happens in that same conversation. And the thing that can be helpful, I would say, so you talked about when you were a child, these behaviors helped you to survive. Well, if you keep in mind that when you remain in that conversation with the illusion of a separate self and egocentric karmic conditioning, what's left out is that child.
Yes.
So ego and illusion is surviving.
Yes.
Yeah, but the child, the incarnation, is completely abandoned and ignored.
Yes.
So I'm always hopeful when I say these things to people that they will be so moved by that, that they'll be so touched by the thought of a child being abandoned and ignored in that way, that they will actually choose the child over egocentric karmic conditioning and that illusion of being a separate self.
I think for me personally, though, it's like it's not a child that I'm abandoning. It's a 40-year-old.
No, it's a child.
Yeah, I mean, I get that.
Get
that. I mean, it's like I have no trouble with if it's this cute child, I don't have no trouble putting my arms around them.
Yeah, that's why it's important to get that that's what's going on.
I think I'm looking for kindness.
Well, that the work is to get to center, because that's where kindness is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I meant.
Mm-hmm.
And the person I'm looking for the kindness from is center. But I think I want it externally.
Well, but here's the thing. You can't be an illusion of a separate self looking for comfort from center.
Oh, I wish I could hear that. Can you say it again?
Yes. What you just described is you want to be the illusion of a separate self and get kindness from center.
Ha. Yep. Yep. Yep.
So what we are required to do.
So this is a voice that needs to be paid attention to then.
Say that again?
So the one who is seeking kindness is the one who's actually seeking center.
Well, the one who's seeking...
That's what I mean.
The one who's seeking kindness is the illusion of a separate self and is in relationship with egocentric karmic conditioning. So it's dropping that whole thing and coming to center. You need to be center.
I am center. Not
an ego trying to get something from center. Our lives are being transformed such that we recognize conscious, compassionate awareness as our authentic being.
Yes. I just forgot.
Yes, we do. We forget. And that conversation with that ego, separate self conversation is so believable, deep, familiar. It's just so very challenging.
And so much of it's below hearing.
Yes. It's an assumption. It's an orientation. It's just reality. Of course, it's not. But that's the way it seems because people have left that place of authenticity before they can remember. So it seems like when we get to the deepest place we can get to, what we run into, that conditioned self that we run into, must be who we really are. Because I can't remember anything before that.
Ha. Remembering you saying that it's very simple. But it also seems monumental.
Mm-hmm.
I've been trying.
Yeah. Well, and you see, that's why I like those techniques of find something that you experience as innocent and use that as your way of finding the innocence.
I find that with my cleaning.
Well, I would say, I would guess that you find that pretty easily with a cat.
Yeah. Actually, when I was sitting here and the cat was in my arms.
Yeah. So you project onto that cat the very best of you.
Yes, and it's easy.
And so you simply follow that projection back, and there's your experience of it for yourself. It's a very good technique for finding our authentic nature.
Thank you, Sherry.
Yeah. Yeah, you're welcome. So then you practice staying with that. Not thinking about it, not making it mean anything, not making any connections. You just stay with that. Follow that projection back and stay with the source of that projection. Okie dokie.
Yes.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, it's 5 minutes after six. We have one more caller on the line.
I just realized that. I just looked at my watch and went, wait a minute. Didn't the show end at six?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to invite that person to talk to us next week?
Yes, and call early and be early in the queue.
Very good.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Michael. It's been great. Glad to be back and glad that you're here. And it's a lovely thing.
Yes, it's great to have you here, too.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sherry.
Talk to you soon. Good night.
Good night.